Hey guys, welcome to Slash Report. I'm Prue, and as per usual, I am joined by my illustrious partner in crime, M. Klutz.
Hello.
And this week, we have a very special guest to help us talk about pineapples, beaches, and feelings, Lopagus.
Hello.
So guys, are we excited? We should be excited.
I'm halfway drunk, so yeah, I'm sure I'm excited. Yeah.
I'm still resigned.
Yeah. Wow. The tenor of this podcast has just been very efficiently set. So in case you haven't already been looking forward to this all week the way that I have.
Such a dick.
This is Slash Report's ever so awesome H5O Death March. So before we get to Lopagus and M. Klutz vomiting up all of their thoughts and feelings about this, since I'm the most emotionally divorced from this show, I thought I would give a quick rundown of what happened. So the end of last season concluded with basically everything going straight to hell in a handbasket. Steve got arrested for killing the governor. Chin apparently became a traitor and went back to work for HPD. Kono was arrested, and Danny was in the process of running back to Jersey with his ex-wife, who he'd knocked up as they were having an affair. Yes, I think that covers it. And lo, the wailing of many fangirls was audible throughout the internet.
Not just fangirls, yeah. I think even normal people were like, what the shit just happened?
No, I think it was a collective moment of just, like, recognition that that show had done something, like, tremendously awful. It's like when What About Steve came out, and you were like, how did Sandra Bullock do this?
They fast-bendered it.
Oh, they fast-bendered that shit super hard.
What's fast-bendering?
Well, fast-bendering is when jumping the shark isn't intense enough. You have to have, like, a mutant Magneto shark.
Yeah.
Okay. They fast-bendered it. So this week, we got the season premiere that we had all been waiting for to try and, in part, answer some of the questions that the season finale posed, as well as to make up for the utter shit show that it was. And I don't know how successful they were, but to break it all down real fast, Steve was in prison. Danny calls in his old trainer, the guy who trained him to be, like, a crazy as a fox seal, to help them clear Steve's name, which through, like, a series of plot twists that don't really make sense, including the one where Spike, but with brown hair, comes and shanks Steve in a prison yard in a vaguely sexual manner.
For his own good.
For his own good. And then Steve breaks out of prison, steals a police car, and then they end up having to, like, solve the crime with a lot of help from Masaoki, the coroner, and then somehow other things happen, and Kono gets kidnapped, but not really, and then Steve gets to clear his name, but in the middle there, it's explained that Rachel and Danny are no longer together. I thought it was kind of a half-ass.
Ooh, and that the baby that she thought was Danny's is actually her husband's. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because she's a London economics graduate who can't count.
And who can't use birth control.
Yeah.
Like, you're having an affair, and you didn't use birth control with either party?
I mean, like, I want to defend her, but I feel like that would reveal really terrible things about myself, so I'm just going to let that one go.
Prue.
What did you guys think of it?
What
did you guys think?
About the season premiere, I thought it was incredibly disappointing. Just, yeah. I'm not mad, I'm disappointed.
I mean, what specifically? I think in a weird way, like, it was fun. It was sort of like, it was very colored.
I was going to say, it was about 2.5 episodes crammed into one.
But that's every episode.
I mean, I feel like there was a huge amount of action, and then there were these long stretches of incredibly boring exposition. So, like, the pacing was just completely, there wasn't any pacing.
Yes.
It was just kind of, oh, we're starting now, oh, no, we've got a long talk with, you know, a guy that we've never met before, and who doesn't even actually get to say anything, but is apparently an old friend of John McGarrett's. And then, like,
my position, let me show it to you.
Oh my god, it was so, like, you know, I've talked about this before, maybe not on Slash Report, but God knows all of my friends know that my cardinal rule is show, don't tell. And there's so much telling in this episode.
Here's the thing. It was a terrible episode, right? Like, it was badly written, badly executed. They threw in a dash of gay to make you happy. I was reluctantly charmed.
Of course you were.
I was like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Why do I like it?
Because you're easy. You're easy like Sunday morning.
I'm more like...
High Five O is kind of the golden retriever of television shows. You know, it's big and it's stupid and it's happy and it loves.
First of all, that's cruel to golden retrievers.
I'm on behalf of all golden retrievers, I'm sorry.
But you know what? It's pretty accurate. It's kind of like, you know, when a dog doesn't understand a glass sliding door and it keeps trying to run through it. Like, that's Hawaii 5-0. And you're still like, that's hilarious. I should put that shit on YouTube.
Yeah, pretty much.
I just have this really intense mental image of Steve trying to, like, use his seal powers to defeat the glass door.
The force field, as the internets call it?
Yes.
I was going to say, he tries to ninja his way out of that, but doesn't happen.
Fail.
So, I mean, I think the first thing that we need to address is, do we want to pretend to give a crap about the overarching plot, or do we just want to talk about this, like, Rachel Danny, like, desperate retcon?
I don't actually believe that there is.
What overarching plot?
Yeah.
This, like, sad thing, this pretend plot that we're supposed to care about.
That's not really there.
Sure, we can talk about it a little. Just because, I mean, okay, the last, like, 10 seconds of the episode where it's revealed that Jenna and Wofat are working together is kind of interesting. I mean, I called it, you know, 3 months ago.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Because I was like, holy shit.
I was not hugely surprised. I figured they were either going to kill a female character or make a female character evil. And lo. But no, I was looking through my old posts and I was like, yeah, either Jenna's going to die or she's going to turn out to be evil. So...
There's so many questions engendered in that statement. I don't even know where to begin.
I was going to say, probably. I mean, it's a mildly interesting plot development. It's not original, though, is the problem.
No.
So it's kind of this idea of, like, I don't know how to put it. Just because it's surprising doesn't mean it's good.
I think the ultimate problem with Hawaii Five-0 is that it seems to have aspirations beyond its capability. So basically, you and I have talked about this before, insofar as, like, why I can't take the show seriously or even just enjoy it on any sort of normal level. It's like, every episode, for some reason, Hawaii is going to save the world from terrorism. And it's always, like, these three guys and some driving and some strong feelings and yelling, and that's going to somehow protect the world from bad guys. And it's so completely ludicrous. Like, if this show was content with being competent and well-executed and to write storylines within the parameters of achievable goals, like, it could be incredibly charming, right? Like, you have good cast chemistry. It's beautiful. Like MK has said, she doesn't like beaches, but she loves beaches on this show. Like, I'm enough of a photography and art geek that I could just watch the colors all day. It's really beautiful to me on my HD stream. But, like, no, it wants more. And like Ariel, she will lose her voice and regret it.
That's great. That's very deep and meaningful of you.
I was going to say, the mermaid analogy, I think, is what sells it. I really do actually kind of agree with you. Hawaii Five-0 is an incredibly Mary Sue type of show, you know? Well, okay, come on, tell me that Steve is not what every guy fantasizes about being.
Wait, can we just say that Hawaii Five-0, despite being the remake of Hawaii Five-0, is basically Dukes of Hazzard?
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like Dukes of Hazzard with dreams of living in the city.
Well, I'm the only one who's actually Southern, and I've never seen Dukes of Hazzard. You're gonna have to explain this to me.
Dukes of Hazzard is a dumb show about two guys and a girl driving fast in a car and fighting for justice, like, by accident and stupidly in their spare time.
Yes, and they're always right.
And they always break the law to save the law.
Exactly.
Wow, that's a really good breakdown of what H5O is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hawaii Five-0 is essentially Dukes of Hazzard with pretensions of being 24.
Yeah, dead accurate.
Yeah. That's not a good look on it.
But you know what?
No, and I was about to say, and I love it for that exact purpose. Like, if I could dream up an ideal show, it would basically be Hawaii Five-0. You know, pretty people,
better executed
location, and lots of action. But yes, I mean, better written. I mean, written that in a way that does not make you think that monkeys did it.
Right.
I'm just saying.
One day Lupagus is going to get an industry job, and this is going to come out, and they're going to be, like, fired.
I was going to say, I've already apparently gotten into some sort of Twitter situation with Peter Lenkov, so whoops.
Who is the showrunner for H5O?
Yeah.
Okay, but
yeah,
he probably deserved it.
I was going to say, I mean, yeah, he did.
It doesn't change the fact that you don't... Ugh, never mind.
I was going to say, like, yeah.
Does it surprise anyone listening to this that I'm the only person with a real job? No.
Whoa, I totally have a real job.
You ate most of a bag of giant chips for lunch and watched NCIS, and your boss almost bro-fisted you for it. That is
after a whole morning of meetings.
Not a job.
No, she gets paid for it. If you get paid for it, it's a real job.
I've been paid for a lot of stuff that was not a real job.
Yeah, that sounds
true. We're not talking about your sordid past.
Yeah.
It wasn't that sordid. I was just in the van. Moving right along, though. Moving right along. Is it just me, or did it feel to anybody else like, I can't decide if this happened before they started filming or after they started filming, but that they basically had to yank the entire Rachel story that they were planning on building into this season?
Yeah, I don't know what happened there.
Because it was so incredibly awkwardly done. Like, the build-up was so huge at the end of last season, right?
Yeah.
I would disagree with that. I would say that the build-up was the last two episodes, and it was incredibly badly done.
Okay, wait.
Yeah, but even if it was compressed into a short period of time, the build-up was big.
Build-up for Hawaii Five-0. Because Hawaii Five-0 is the show that doesn't plan shit. Shit just happens.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, I'm distorting the importance of various elements from last season in my head. But for some reason, having watched the season finale last season, I really thought that we were going to have, like, a big Rachel arc. At least in this episode, or the first couple of episodes, as they deal with, like, the fact that Danny's sperm is indefatigable and all these other things. But, like, they totally pulled it to such a degree that it was relegated to a car conversation and she didn't even show up.
But Steve had so many feelings that he almost risked getting caught by the cops in order to make eyes at Danny and be like, I'm here for you. We can make it work.
Yeah. That scene, I mean, that for no other reason, I would kind of semi-forgive the Rachel Danny arc character assassination because it gave us that scene. Because it was a pretty great scene.
I loved it. I loved that scene.
Yeah. I'd say the best part about that was that wasn't even, like, the gayest part of this episode.
There were so many gay parts.
Like, what would you, like, where do you begin?
Well,
why are you yelling at me?
I was like, Danny, come on, he's just been stabbed. He had to, like, pack his own wound with, like, assassination paper.
Raise your hand to anybody who has actually had that or witnessed that conversation between their parents of, like, you know, why are you so mad? I'm not mad. I'm just, you know, baffled as to why you would do this.
I'm raising all 8 hands right now.
Exactly. No, my parents never fought.
Your parents just didn't have feelings?
They had 0 feelings, and then they were like, this is over. We're a robot family. What do you want?
I want to be part of a robot family.
I know you do.
Disgusting.
I would actually say that the gayest thing for me in Hawaii Five-0 is that Steve has been basically framed for killing the governor. He's in prison.
Hold on. And for killing Laura Hill. Laura Hill just kind of gets lost in the shuffle.
And for killing Laura Hill.
Yeah.
He's in prison with, like, as a law enforcement officer with criminals, okay? So, which is, like, the worst, other than being a pedo, that's, like, the worst thing you could do in prison, is to be a cop. And his first thought upon seeing Danny isn't, like, are we working on my case? It's, God, you look good without a tie. Sexy.
Yeah, I like this no tie look. It's good for you.
Yeah, and just, like, starts laughing and is like, yes, time to flirt.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about the whole, like, story arc of Danny's tie, which I would argue is an actual character arc, is that Steve has been way too invested in that to convincingly be heterosexual.
Yeah.
He's basically the second, like, he's Step Steve, like, almost canonically Step Steve. Like, I have a difficult time watching that show And, like, specifically watching the episodes where you found out that Rachel and Danny were, like, screwing on the side. And not interpreting that as anything other than Steve being like, holy shit, what's happening? I thought we were in a relationship.
No, that's exactly how it looked. Like, not even as a slasher. Full on, I was like, Jesus Christ.
He was heartbroken.
He's like, his face.
Were you ever going to tell me?
I felt bad for him. I felt bad for Steve. That's pretty intense.
I was going to say, no, when Prue feels bad about your romantic situation, it's pretty dire.
Yeah, considering that's like a bad sign.
One of us was raised by robots and it wasn't Prue. She is the most robot-like of the three of us.
I'm not robotic. I'm just practical with feelings.
Practical with feelings.
Practical with feelings.
Say, there's a reason that never made, like, a pop song. Practical with feelings.
My feelings are just so practical for you, baby.
If you were actually practical with feelings, you would never be caught dead saying stupid shit like that. Okay, so I actually, because I'm a nerd down to the bones, I took notes as I was watching this. Also because I wasn't drunk, crying, or screaming at the television.
Fuck you.
I was doing all three.
It's so amazing to watch a show where you don't care. I should do this more often.
I started it with, like, my arms crossed at work at my desk, and by the end I was, like, chin hands.
You are so ludicrously easy.
I just, you know, they don't have to try very hard to get me back, and I hate it.
You're just like...
You're kind of a slut there.
For TV,
so
yeah.
You're so easy.
Yeah, pretty much.
But
like,
not...
you were worse than me in House.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It took me...
Yeah, I was about to say, we've talked about this. Prue violently broke up with House.
Yeah.
To the extent that if it had been a relationship... she would have set, you know, House's clothes on fire in the middle of the lawn.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah. And we've talked about this before, and I would do that with Hawaii Five-0, but I would probably still take him back.
Yeah. No, I took House back twice.
Yeah, you did. How did that end for you?
Well, it ended in slowly me not taking him back anymore, and then finding out, like, 6 months later, as I continued to win the breakup, that House had driven his car into Cuddy's living room. So,
poor Cuddy.
Yeah.
I feel Hawaii Five-0 and I had a screaming match in a car and didn't talk for the summer. And then we, like, made out at a party.
You, what do you, you're like 16. Don't be 16-year-old me.
Thankfully, that was never me in real life. That's just me with television. I now understand why you're such a terrible person.
What? Moving on to the notes that I took about the Hawaii Five-0 season premiere. So the first line of notes is just, Steve is ferociously insane, with ferociously insane all in uppercase letters. Like,
underlined.
Ferociously insane, like, crazy hot girl insane. Followed by that says, also, I don't even ship it, but he and Danny are so married.
Super married.
So yeah. Married.
I mean, first of all, the fact that, I don't know if it's implied or... it was implied that neither Chin nor Kono had actually visited Steve in prison, but, like, Danny had been there pretty much every day.
Yeah, that's how it felt.
Yeah. And so, like, I'm sorry, but who other than your wife visits you every fucking day?
Danny Williams.
Yeah, pretty much.
Super secret gay marriage man.
Yeah, I was about to say. Danny is definitely the... well, actually, I would say Danny is the husband and Steve is the wife in that relationship, but whatever.
I don't know. Danny's, like, the haranguing fish wife.
I was about to say, maybe they're both the wife.
Other things I wrote down, Max's car is amazing.
I love everything about Max. Can we say that?
Max is kind of wonderful. When he showed his car keys with the little...
oh my god.
Oh, that was so cute.
If Max were a real person, I would try to marry him.
Yeah, I mean, but my problem with the characterization of Max is, like, the first season, he was... I don't know how to put it, but he was odd in a way of, like, you know, he likes to save up money in order to test forensic evidence, and he likes to make pickles and stuff like that. And then now it seems like with the season premiere, they kind of were like, oh, he's just a nerd. Like, and so they were like, well, he's nerdy in the Star Trek and the Star Wars way. And it was really kind of a weird addition.
I have to say, though, Lupagus, like, to a vast swath of people in the world, like, those two are not differentiated.
And that's fine. But I feel like our reaction of Max is awesome is not the one that was intended by the writers. I feel like Max is supposed to be this freak that everybody laughs at.
That's not the feeling that I got.
He was very endearingly portrayed in this episode.
Well, yes, but that's because it's Masioka, and he's adorable.
Yeah, but they made the changes knowing that it was Masioka. And I feel like, while it didn't make sense, it's the kind of thing where you could, if you were going to stretch it and give the Hawaii Five-0 writers the credit that they do not deserve.
Not deserve at all, and we'll talk about that later.
You could say that, you know, before, there's, like, the professional weirdness, the weirdness that you are willing to show at work. Yeah. And then there's the, like, we're pals now. You can fully know about my terrible Star Trek love.
I was about to say, if I'm allowed to call you Steve, then you're allowed to find out that I'm a huge Trekkie person.
Yeah, it's like he realized that they're friends now, or they're, like, more of a team, and he feels more comfortable.
Yeah. And although I would say that, like, I've driven a Volkswagen thing, and they're actually a shit ton of fun to drive, so I don't see that as particularly nerdy. I see that as awesome.
You're talking to two people who abhor cars.
Yeah, I don't understand you.
It's called liking to take deep breaths and enjoying the earth in public transit.
Also, I get car sick and was trained to fall asleep in every vehicle.
Well, you're like a perfect candidate for a kidnapping.
Other things that I realized watching this episode... that I actually have already told both of you, but I should share with the world at large. When they said that Steve's grandfather died at the Arizona, I realized that, like, Steve's grandfather died at the Arizona. That means that Steve's great-grandfather probably died in some other, like, horrible sortie. And Steve's dad has died, clearly, like, in the line of duty and having had, like, probably an illustrious military background of his own. Which means that Steve is Lieutenant Dan from Forrest Gump.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I would totally agree with that particular characterization.
Which makes Danny his beautiful Asian wife. And,
which makes Danny Forrest Gump?
No, because Danny is appropriately foreign. He's from Jersey. That's like a whole different world.
Have you ever seen Forrest Gump?
Yes.
Did you just slash Forrest and Lieutenant Dan by proxy? Is that what you
Not intentionally. Oh my god, why did you do that to me, Prue? Oh
it
my
came
god.
Out of your mouth, Lupagus.
No, I didn't. I wasn't thinking about... I'm not yelling at you!
Subconsciously, you made that decision, and we are only here to witness it.
Oh, she's gotta go bleach herself now.
Mm-hmm. I like the Lieutenant Governor. I think that he's an interesting new character. I think that I'm still not over the fact that they made Jean Smart into somebody who was a dirty official or whatever, and I think that that was an incredible cop-out.
Really?
No, like, I think you ascribe a lot of intelligence and, like, potential to the show that it never had. Just watching me get so upset about it, and I'm kind of like, I just can't work up any ire about this.
You just put the kid...
But the thing is that I could say that I would not expect very much from a network show. Honestly, I do.
But see...
There are millions and millions of dollars that go into this show, and there's no thought to the plot.
Yeah, but see, this isn't me saying, like, oh, it's network. I don't think there's going to be a lot of thought. Like, my favorite show is on network. I say that because it's Y5O, and it's never betrayed any level of, like, depth or intelligent planning, like, from episode one.
See, I would disagree with that. I think that the first half of the first season actually did show a lot of potential. That, I mean, yeah, there were a lot of dumb action moments, which, you know, explosions, yay. But I think that there was a lot of development, there was a lot of character, there was a lot of really interesting writing going on. And then after the tsunami episode, they were just like, yeah, we don't really actually care.
Whereas I feel like the writing was not that good, and I didn't think that it had an awesome plan or anything, but I wasn't watching it for awesome plot. I was watching it for, one, the yay, which I'm always watching for, and yeah. Two, okay, we talk a lot about explosions in Hawaii Five-0, but I think if you actually look back, there's not that many explosions, despite Steve's love for them. What there is a lot of is getting, like, shot or stabbed and then running a triathlon.
Yeah, but that's just, like, Saturday morning for Steve.
That's totally Saturday morning for Steve, but that's what makes Hawaii Five-0 good for me. He's not human, he's an android. He just fuels up on gasoline and explosives, and he's good to go.
I was going to say, he is essentially the Terminator.
I did love that one episode, I don't even remember what episode this was, where he had to, like, go into the forest and become, like, Secret Forest Commando, and he just, like, randomly had... war paint with him?
In his pocket.
I was gonna say, here's the thing, I read that script, and that's all in there. That was all intended. That was not in any way kind of like, this would be funny on the day. This was all like, yes, Steve is secretly Martin Sheen from Apocalypse Now.
Secretly? He's not hiding that very well. It's not taught that very well.
Plus, we have to remember that he hid grenades in Danny's car. Danny's car that he drives Grace to school in. They were, like, in the door.
First of all, those grenades would have never gone off without Commander McGarrett's permission.
That's true. They would have dared.
And secondly, Gracie knows how to get rid of them. It's like the third thing that Steve taught her.
That's after true.
He taught her that thing where she can physically rip testicles off of boys.
Danny left the room to go to the bathroom for like 2 minutes, and Steve taught her three amazing things that she will never forget. Thanks, Step Steve.
I was about to say, that's part of this story that I'm writing about Steve and Grace, and they're amazing.
Amazing.
I love the relationship between Steve and Grace. I think that it's adorable, and it's one of the, what's the word that I want to use? Mitigating factors?
It's not just adorable, it's super adorable.
It really is. I mean, that's the reason that I actually watch the show, is because of the characters, not because of the plot. I don't really care about WoFat. I don't really care about, you know, the serial murderer of the day, the week. You know, I care about, is Danny going to make it work out with Rachel, or is Steve going to figure out how to not be a robot? The characters are the ones that I actually care about, and it's incredibly frustrating to watch the season premiere and realize that the writers don't actually care about the characters.
I don't think there's anything wrong with being a robot, but if we're going to grade the season premiere on a scale, on like a letter grade scale, what do you think?
C minus.
B minus.
Such an easy whore.
Shut up! I like violence.
Okay.
There was a lot of violence. I mean, here's my thing, is that, like, okay, the new lieutenant, do we have a name for him? Deming?
I have no idea.
I'm gonna say it's Deming.
I thought that was the name of someone else.
Well, that Deming is also from Castle.
Oh, that's why.
I'm dubbing the lieutenant governor Squeaky.
Squeaky, okay. So Governor Squeaky, I feel like he is, you know, trying to institute this new, like, accountability of Hawaii Five-O task force. And yet, you know, Steve beat up a lot of people in the season premiere.
But he didn't
kill them. Shouldn't there be some sort of consequences for that?
He cuffed them later and read them their rights.
No. I'm talking about, like, the poor, like, medics who were trying to help him. And he beat
and that cop, he, like, kicked the shit out of in the bathroom.
It's more like he just lightly disabled them. He just lightly disabled them, guys. It's not a big deal.
He got a groundhog in the face.
I was going to say, have you ever actually suffered a concussion from somebody beating you up? Because I have, and it's, you know, not fun.
I'm pretty sure that he Spock nerve punched them.
That
went, like, really wrong. Intensely fast.
Wait, can we? Lethagus just snorted.
That's real special.
We friend.
So I guess, okay, then I guess the question is, now that we have the letter grids in, are you guys watching the rest of the season?
Oh, yeah, I'm in it to win it.
I watch it on an episode-by-episode basis.
Well, actually, it's interesting because I'm actually not going to be watching the next couple episodes.
And why is that, Lethagus?
And I was going to say, this is where the spoilers come in, and this is where I pull on my little social justice tights. It's because Colonel Sizemore is going to be on, and I'm sorry, but I don't really want to watch an episode where a guy who beats up women in his spare time is given a job. That's my thing.
How long is he on for?
He's apparently he's got like a multiple episode arc, and they're bragging about it. They're like, oh my god, we got Tom Sizemore. And it's like, first of all, you could have gotten him for a bag of Coke. And second of all, yeah.
I agree that they could have done better casting.
I was going to say, it's not like there's not a lot of, you know, incredibly great white male actors out there who could have knocked this out of the park.
Yeah.
Not been somebody who's been convicted of abusing women.
I think we should move on from Hawaii Five-O. I think we should. I know that we have some terrible, terrible things to discuss.
We do. We do have a couple terrible things to discuss. But before we hit the actual facts, terrible stuff, the two other shows that came back from hiatus, we're sadly going to be missing Fringe, a ton of stuff. We're sadly missing a ton of stuff because it's airing tonight. or The Good Wife, which is airing on Sunday.
We can cover it next week.
We'll talk about it next week. I already have feelings about those shows.
Yeah, we will.
I'm already looking forward to listening to your feelings because I've gotten caught up on The Good Wife, and oh my god.
Right?
We're absolutely right.
Right?
It's amazing. So good.
Amazing.
It's basically, so next week is just like, be prepared because there's definitely going to be like 5 minutes of me just like making rapturous orgasm noises with zero actual content.
I was going to say, here's the thing. For those of you who are listening who have never given Good Wife a choice, or a chance, sorry about that. The Good Wife is Suits, if Suits were incredibly well done.
And, oh no, it's still gay, I guess, in that perspective.
No, it's totally still gay.
Yeah.
Well, it's also canonically gay.
Kalinda.
Yeah. Oh my god, Kalinda is my, like, I would love to just...
She's the one night stand that you want.
Everyone on the podcast, as well as everyone listening who is a Good Wife fan, Eli and Kalinda are going to meet for the first time in the new season.
And they're going to become besties.
It's going to be amazing.
I'm sitting here, like, clapping my hands together.
I know, it's good for me. But a show that, like, also came back that I, like, was completely not thrilled for was Castle. And mm-hmm. I think that TV Line put it perfectly when they ran a headline that was, so, yeah, that happened.
That's basically Castle. It. I was so excited.
I watched the entire episode and really enjoyed it.
You enjoyed that episode?
I did.
I thought that episode was garbage.
Actually, I thought it was kind of realistic.
No.
It was really, really poorly done. Like, I can always tell whether or not, like, I'm enjoying an episode of TV by whether or not that's all I do. I've never done this with Castle, but, like, I generally, like, put Castle on. And I, like, sit there and expect to, like, watch it the whole episode. I kept getting up and, like, I paused the episode, like, 5 times and, like, read 3 different books and, like, washed some dishes.
I fell asleep. I,
like, came back and, like, fast forward through 10 minutes of it. I was so bored.
I actually fell asleep. And then when I woke up, I was like, I guess I should go back and finish that, but I don't want to because that's how bad it is.
See, that's really interesting to me because I watched it from beginning to end and I was mesmerized the whole time.
They hand-waved her boyfriend.
Well, yes, but did you really expect anything else?
I expected slightly better handling of it.
I didn't.
And then on top of that, there's no way in hell that Alexis is going to be like, Dad, seriously, stop trying to save Beckett's life. No, that's impossible.
There was just, like, so much, like, I wasn't upset at this episode. I wasn't, like, disappointed by anything. I wrote down 2 things about this episode. Oh, that's not true. Never mind, this goes on to the next page. I wrote down several things about this episode. So the opening scene, I wrote down, Lainey is breaking my heart, because that scene where they're going to the hospital and she's got the chest compressions is crushing.
Lainey is consistently,
Lainey is always awesome, and their friendship has always been genuine and convincing. Mm-hmm. I gave A+ to Alexis defending Castle in the hospital.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed that scene where Beckett walks back into the squad room, and the only splash of color in that entire room is Ryan's pink shirt.
I talked to my mom about this episode, guys, and I think she put it best. She said, the only thing worth watching in that episode was those 2 guys, by what she meant, Ryan and Esposito.
Yeah. But there's also, like, that scene, and was this on the swings, where she talks about the wall she built around her heart? And, like, I wrote down, this is profoundly awful dialogue. Castle would edit the shit out of this. And I could just, like, see in the cogs of, like, Rick Castle's brain, like, redlining that shit so hardcore.
Rewriting, like, it and mentally having her say it to him better?
Yeah.
No, I would agree that that particular scene was terrible. But the rest of it, I really enjoyed watching.
Solid, like, D.
F.
I would say B-.
D. MK gave it an F. Giving it a B-. All right. Interesting. We're moving on. To a show whose only notes I made for it were, all caps, surprisingly awesome, NCIS had its 9th season premiere, and I went into that preparing to get punched in the face for still loving it.
Oh my god,
I was going to say, as you should get punched in the face for still loving it.
No, you should not, because this episode was brilliant.
Okay, first of all, anyone who, like, likes and expects good things out of Hawaii Five-0 has no leg to
stand. No. Okay, I will argue this to the death, that the Gibbs, Tony, whoever is on that show dynamic is way different from the Hawaii Five-0 dynamic.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about general qualitative show.
Yeah, I would still argue that Hawaii Five-0 is much better than NCIS.
Holy shit, you just entered, like, Bizarro Land. Enjoy your freak Superman and, like, your weird colored sky.
Lupagus.
That's not true in any universe that we exist in.
No, Lupagus, really? have you actually watched straight through the first three seasons of NCIS?
No, because I love myself.
The first three seasons?
I would argue that point, but you're just so wrong on this.
The first three...
I have watched about probably 30% of the first three seasons of NCIS, and I was continually unimpressed.
I think this is just going to be, like, a personal preference thing, because, like, we hated Castle, and she liked it.
That's like, valid.
Yeah. But anyways, season premiere of the ninth season, I was really going into this thinking that they were going to drag this, like, bullshit undercover assignment that Tony had, which, like, we all know how well those go whenever he has them.
So terrible.
So well. I was like, oh, who does he have to pretend to fall in love with this time, thereby crushing my heart in the process?
Yeah.
It was surprisingly good. It was really compact. It hit all the character beats that I wanted, although I would have enjoyed having more Tim and Abby and more Ducky.
More Palmer.
Yeah. But overall, like, if you want to talk about the core emotional heart of that show being Gibbs's relationship with Tony and Tony, they struck this one out of the park for me. Like, I really enjoyed it.
It was beautiful. I
was completely not prepared to like it.
No, I felt bad for Tony. I was like, you know, my heartstrings were tugged on. I was like, oh, Gibbs, team, like, everyone trying to pull together during, like, this shit situation.
And, like, Ziva recognizing that Tony was on an undercover mission and, like, trying to be supportive of him without asking too many questions.
Yeah.
It was just, like, that was the sort of, like, partnership and, like, the great stuff that you saw in, like, season three. So just to clarify, like, what actually happened, end of last season, we, like, wrapped up a serial killer arc, and Tony gets handed an undercover assignment to deal with, like, basically some sort of national security leak within the organization. He flips over the photograph of his mark, and it clearly he recognizes who it is. And I really went into this episode thinking that, like, we were going to spend the whole season hashing that shit out, which would have been awful.
But no, they did it in one episode, minus, like, the main loose end.
Yeah, and it was beautiful because they did it all in flashback, which at least one person tweeted to say that she didn't like the format because it was so overused. But maybe it's because it's been a while since I've watched NCIS on a regular basis, but I didn't feel that. I didn't feel that it felt weird. I really liked it because it gave you more time to sort of, like, stew in, like, the character of Tony and, like, stew in, like, the character of Gibbs. And you know, you got, like, little delicious personal tidbits about, you know.
Even though it's an episode that's told through flashbacks, it's more like a frame narrative episode, which is really solid because frame narratives, if you do them right, are fantastic. And it's really an episode about Tony, with the concussion and, like, some memory loss, trying to reconstruct what's happened.
It was a good episode. And I have to say, I didn't anticipate this, but I really enjoyed the introduction of Scott Wolf as, like, random dude that we have to be wary of for this season.
When I saw his face, I was like, I don't know who that is, but I like his face. I bet he's evil. Dead on.
Okay, for those of you who don't actually know Scott Wolf that well or, like, haven't been party to this phenomenon...
He looks like the love child of Misha Collins and the guy from Back to the Future.
That's actually incredibly accurate and terrifying. I hate that you...
Michael J. Fox?
Yeah, he looks like Michael J. Fox plus Misha Collins. Like, had a tour.
He does, doesn't he?
Pardon?
No, I said he kind of does, doesn't he?
He does. It's really creepy. But have you know Scott Wolf's face. He hasn't aged in 20 years. He looks exactly the same.
Explained by Back to the Future plus Misha Collins. It's all explained right there.
I'm pretty sure he's a vampire, is what I'm saying.
Time-traveling angel. You're welcome.
This
podcast has gone in such a terrible direction.
It always does.
I'm going to, like, take this chance to say that, like, I read some spoilers about season 7 of Supernatural, because...
No.
Same reasons that I occasionally like to punch myself in the vagina when I'm at the office.
I was going to say, why are we talking about Supernatural?
Hi, it's me. Have you met me before?
But remember, I'm the person that you forbid from speaking during the season, I think it was season 2 of Merlin?
Yes.
Like, and I think you also did something similar during the season whatever of Supernatural.
Yeah. No, I understand. I'm just saying, like, the reason I'm always going to hurt myself with SPN is because of me, and I can't help it. But yeah. I'm just going to read you what I wrote down in the notebook. Season 7 of Supernatural sounds horrible. Like, so horrible. I want to go back to writing my season 5 AU where nothing sucked this bad. Just Dean was in hell and crazy and filled with pain and tears.
I'm so glad I failed out of that show.
Yeah. I'm still going to watch it.
Why you got to hurt yourself like this, baby?
I don't, it's the only way I know how to live.
It's like, why do you keep hitting yourself?
I know, I wish I could stop. But in happy news, apparently Spy Daddy might be the voice for Charlie in Charlie's Angels.
I don't know what you just said.
Victor Garber?
Yeah.
Victor Garber.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that would be the only reason to actually watch Charlie's Angels, wouldn't it?
Whoa.
Oh, no. Actually, I'm looking forward to Charlie's Angels.
Sorry, is this a new Charlie's Angels?
I love the movies.
Is this a TV show they're making?
Yeah.
Because I loved the movies.
And actually, Drew Barrymore is one of the producers. And then that girl from that movie about wine is one of the angels. No, the other one. The one with Chris Pine in it. What was it called? The one with Alan Rickman.
I'm pretty sure you were the only person who watched it.
Yeah.
Probably. What was it called?
We'll figure
anyway,
it out.
Look up Alan Rickman and Chris Pine, and you'll be able to find it.
I bet the first thing that's going to come up is Snape porn.
Snape Captain Kirk.
I was going to say, probably. Sorry about that, guys, who are listening to this.
Well, we know how fandom works. But actually, that's a good transition, because talking about fandom and how fandom works, something came up this week, and I know you definitely wanted to talk about it, MCLUTS.
Yeah, I did. So, in previous weeks on Slash Report, we've talked a lot about how much we love Suits fandom. Because, you know, generally speaking, Suits fandom is just full of, like, super nice people doing awesome things, and it's just a really charming, sweet place to be. That changed this week. I don't know what they put in the water or if there was a full moon, but you bitches are crazy. And not in a cool way. Like, this was not okay. I follow multiple threads on the Suits meme. And in two different threads that I was following by two different Anons, at least in theory, one thread became, someone said, you know, oh, I've been enjoying this story, good job, but my enjoyment has really hit a plateau. Followed by like 20 people all being like, yeah, this story kind of blows now, but thanks for writing it in the middle of a story.
Are you kidding me?
This is just completely fucking, like, if you are one of those people who left one of those comments and you're listening to this, like, hit yourself in the face. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, we never want to speak to you.
Like, stop following any of us because you're an asshole.
The next thing that happened in the other thread, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. I don't, like, seriously, it was horrible. So in a different thread, someone is writing a story that actually we're enjoying, which we refer to as Sad Slave Mike. I don't know what the actual title is.
He's getting happier.
He is getting happier, and it's like a really beautiful story. But at this point in the story, Mike has gone on a date, or two dates actually, with a girl. And someone messaged the author and was like, seriously, I'd appreciate it if you would put in a warning for het. And so the author did, which followed, again, like 50 comments of people being like, that's misogynistic. You're an asshole. No, she should warn for het. I'm afraid of het. So I was like, I can't take this. My inbox was just full of people being assholes. So I went to my live journal message box, which I never go to, and I messaged the Suits Mean mods, and I was like, listen, these are the two things that are happening. You probably don't know about it, but I think you should do something. So she goes into each thread, cuts them off, and is like, guys, stop this, here's why. This discussion is over. You either return to the fic or you stop talking. And in both threads, both of them, two separate stories, people continued to argue. And she actually had to freeze, then delete, and then refreeze threads.
I think that this is, like, part of the reason this happens, like, this pops up on kink memes specifically, is because, A, you still have the Anon commenting, right? Like, whenever you can not comment with your name, your quotient of being an, like, has everyone seen that Penny Arcade strip? And I know that people have issues with Penny Arcade, but, like, they have a very, very prescient and, like, accurate script, a comic about, like, the little internet machine where people can be perfectly nice, and then if you get internet anonymity, you come out as, like, an evil troll on the other end.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. I feel like that happens a lot with anonymous comments on kink memes, which is, like, awful because a lot of, like, 99.9 repeating percent of the people on those things are fantastic and awesome and generous and, like, really fun, enthusiastic people, and then you have, like, two jerks who are ruining it for everybody. And the other problem is exactly like what you had, where people track threads. So it's not like something where you encounter occasionally. If this is a story that you're reading, you're possibly getting every piece of this wank, like, delivered straight to your inbox.
And I would be like, oh, it's a new part. No, it's just someone being an asshole still. And then, like, it's not just being an asshole. Yeah, people were assholes on two separate things. It's you were super assholes, and then the mod told you why you should stop being an asshole, and you continued to be an asshole. Like, one of the stories that I'm tracking is actually frozen because of this kind of behavior.
Yeah.
That's not cool. Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
Completely defeating the point of fanfic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we've had this conversation before about how anon memes or memes that allow people to be anonymous are really dangerous.
I'm okay. Like, here's the thing. Like, just everyone don't be a jerk. Like,
but that's never gonna work. In terms of making people not be jerks.
I know, but I just feel like if I can resist that behavior, and I'm a jerk in real life.
I was about to say, all three of us are kind of assholes in real life.
I'm super nice.
No,
that's true. Okay, sure. All three of us are assholes.
If we can resist that sort of shit on the internet, like, I bet you anybody can.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, Will Wheaton made his family crest say, don't be a dick. You know what?
Exactly.
Listen to Will Wheaton. He's a smart guy.
Did Will Wheaton really do that?
Yes. Yeah.
That's kind of adorable.
Yeah. And plus, it's the only person who actually enjoyed Wesley Crusher, though, so.
I had a crush on Wesley Crusher.
Actually, Mklutz, you and I can be bros. I mean, not that we weren't already bros.
We can be extra bros.
I did, too.
Thank you.
I had a crush on Wesley Crusher.
Oh my god, are you guys gonna fight for him?
No, because I was torn between Wesley Crusher and Commander Riker.
Ooh.
I was about to say, you can take either one. I didn't really ever think about it in terms of guys that I could actually get.
Oh, I'm younger than you, let's remember, so I didn't actually think of them in terms of getting. I was just like, they're the best!
Yeah.
There's something, like, alternately sweet and terrible about this conversation.
At any rate,
I was about to say, let the record show that I'm, I think, about five or six years older than everybody else on this show.
Not accurate, but okay.
Whatever.
55 and a chain smoker. So.
In a muumuu.
Yes.
With a segue.
Yes. I actually do want a segue for realsies, though.
I'm secretly 12.
What? That we knew.
Yeah.
Is that it? Was there anything else? Guys, just be nice to each other. Come on.
I feel like people have really lost their internet etiquette, if they ever had it. And so, you know, just, it's a friendly reminder, don't be a dick.
Yeah, I think basically all of life kind of boils down to Will Wheaton's family crest.
Yeah.
Don't dick.
I was going to say, I feel like Will Wheaton, if he ever hears this, will be very proud to hear that his family crest, don't be a dick, is kind of the be-all and end-all of what
Slash Report feels like the world should operate on.
While we're on the topic of don't be a dick, I think it's time for Prue to be a little bit of a dick and answer one of our amazing Slash Report questions that we've received recently.
I think you're going to have to give the background on this amazing Slash Report question received recently, Mklutz, because if I'm going to be the one who has to explain the verbal flowchart of this, you have to tell the context.
Okay. When we post Slash Report, obviously Prue and I both make entries on our journals with the artwork and information about what's happening this week. And the point is, I am friends with two people who are fantastic. You should totally be friends with them as well. Yoko Siren and Elandria Lore. And they got into a discussion thread underneath my most recent Slash Report post, which devolved into a conversation about, one, what is nodding? Two, how or why is nodding so pervasive in multiple fandoms right now? And three, I believe the last was more of a point rather than a question. One of them, Yoko Siren, said that she could do without ever hearing the phrase, I'm going to breed you ever again. And you know what? If you're going to make comments like that in the thread under a Slash Report post, congratulations. You are now a feature in Slash Report.
Oh, God. We should name this feature. What should it be named? I may name it How Did My Life Come to This?
I'd like to call it What Is My Life? Or Look at Your Life, Look at Your Choices.
Yeah, I've also requested that somewhere in the background we play the NBC The More You Know twinkle. So I have to say that the process of putting together a response to this question was, I guess, capital A, amazing. But to answer the first part of this question, which was, what is nodding? Is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So nodding is, to put it in the barest of clinical terms, something that happens with certain animals when they have sex, where the base of the male's penis will become bulbous as he ejaculates and buzz. You'll hear this word a lot, and I'm sorry to ruin this for all of you. Ties the male animal to the female animal, basically blocking in, like tying them together because he can't pull the giant knot out of the vagina, and locking in all of the semen. That is essentially what nodding is. It happens mostly with like dogs, but the Natural History Museum had like some stuffed foxes doing it. I paid money to go into this exhibit, and then I really wanted to kill myself. Yeah, so that is, biologically speaking, what nodding is. Part two of the question being, how did it become a thing in fandom? This is a much more convoluted answer, folks. And you're going to have to bear with me. This is my interpretation, or like my theory on how this happened. To give you some background, I keep up with all the Supernatural kink memes. Not because I enjoy them, or because I feel anything on them, or because a lot of the prompts or fills are good for me. It's almost like a challenge accepted situation, and it has been for years now, which MCLETS can attest to.
We're all about challenge accepted.
Yeah, but one of the first times she ever came to visit me in New York, unfortunately, had to become acquainted with the fact that I have like all the kink memes networked and shit on Delicious, and like I will go through and read them.
Yeah, that's true.
Even if they're terrible. Most of the time, especially if they're terrible.
I was going to say, especially if they're terrible.
But it's been years, so it's given me a really interesting sort of insight into the progression of, like, certain kinks and how they fan out into fandom. So, like, this is just my theory. If you guys have an alternate one for how this became big, this is just what I've seen. And I think I have a 50% chance of being right. And I made two different flowcharts for this. One that's just for me as notes. And one that I will, yes, take a photo of and post to our Twitter account. Number one thing to know is that nodding is a crossover kink on two levels. Number one, it's from Geality, which I would say is probably pretty underground as a porn kink, which has gone from bestiality to mainstream in the context of fandom. And it's also a crossover kink in the sense that it went from Supernatural outward to fucking everybody. Specifically, that disease vector went from SPN to Inception to X-Men First Class, I've seen it in.
BBC Sherlock.
There have been a couple of other fandoms which escape me at the moment, but I've definitely seen it across multiple platforms at this point.
I also fully believe it's going to spread further.
Oh, definitely. It's going to be a thing. Going into its history on Nifty or ASSTR.org, do not Google either of those if you're at the office. It would actually make me nuts, so I'm going to talk mostly in the context of fandom, where the human variant of nodding, sort of, has thrived. And basically, it comes down to this. Supernatural gave way to J2, which is Jensen Jared RPS. Jared has dogs. So if you take, like, the festering primordial goop that is porn in Supernatural fandom anyways, derive it into J2 RPS, you add in dogs, you've got a sudden subsector of fandom who's secretly always been into bestiality, or like maybe trying things out, popping up out of the woodwork. Don't go looking for this, there's a lot of it. And when you have bestiality, hurrah, let's introduce nodding because of the dog penis. Then, the tipping point, as I like to call it, someone realized you could just map the biology of dog dicks and the knot onto people without the awkward animal fuckery. And, quote, a star was born, is what I wrote. I think that part of the reason this picked up so much steam is that this also met the current obsession with werewolves and animal shifters and married it beautifully with this idea of like a boom of overflowing semen.
Yeah, it did.
And I think that like the tipping point where everyone was like, hey, we could just give a man a penis that knots at the base versus having to bone a dog, married into the Catboy Arthur thing that happened in Inception.
Yes.
And they fell into, like, this black hole, which somehow invited Nodding Fig and spread it far and wide. Because, you know, I think that it's still pretty underground in Supernatural fandom, or rather, like, Supernatural kink meme stuff. But as soon as it hit the ground running in Inception, that, like, propagated. That propagated, like, a case of fucking syphilis throughout fandom.
Yeah, it's kind of beautiful to me, though. You know what? There are things in Nodding stories outside of the nodding that I really enjoy, because Nodding stories inevitably, bless you.
This is like, this is my internal organs trying to get out of my body for this.
I know. Nodding stories inevitably involve like one super possessive person who's like obsessed with the other, and not in like a creepy Twilight way, but in, you know, a fan-ish, slightly power dynamic way. And super good for me. I can't help it, okay? I love that shit. And inevitably, one of them is always the top and one of them is the bottom. And I'm sorry if this offends people, but I have very strict ideas about who in each pairing should be the bottom or the top. And when you fuck with it, I just can't read that story.
You and Zoetrope.
Yeah, me and Zoetrope.
I think that's kind of it. I think the third part of that question, right, is why do people find it hot? I can't really answer that question. You know, like you like kinks are like a butterfly. You can't dissect it. I don't know why things get people off. The point is, I don't know. I don't think you can ever judge someone's kink or try to figure out what it's hot specifically about it. But I think that you hit on two parts of it, right? Like the ultra-possessive element.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that probably more people than are willing to admit have very strong feelings about top and bottom pairings in fandom. In any case, fandom, you're welcome. I just explained nodding to you, so you no longer have to be confused or click out of curiosity and be scarred. Although this may have scarred you on many levels already.
Too late, suckers. You're already here.
Yeah. Let's move right along to our questions for the week. We had someone ask us to talk about the Emmys, and sadly, I think MCLEFS and I agreed that, like, we have zero opinions about it. So yeah, sorry to say that we can't really discuss it, mostly because I don't think either of us watched it.
Nope.
Just... And I didn't know who won until I went to work and Red Gawker.
So. I guess I heard that Jim Parsons finally got an award, and I believe he has been waiting for years and super deserves it. Jim Parsons plays Sheldon Cooper in The Big Bang Theory, and last year, they gave that award to one of the Sheen brothers for 2.5 Men, and I was like, well, that's bullshit, and then Charlie Sheen had his meltdown, and I was like, vindicated. Should have given it to Jim Parsons.
Well, obviously, well, he got it this year.
Yeah.
And our second question for this week segues really nicely because someone wanted NCIS Rex.
The question was for someone wanted NCIS Rex, right?
Indeed.
I actually have a lot of NCIS Rex, and I have narrowed this down to like 6 or something.
Oh my god, narrowed it down to 6?
Yeah. If you want more, they're on My Delicious. They're tagged NCIS.
Similarly goes with My Delicious. I have lots of NCIS tags as well, so happy reading.
I'm just going to do a quick overview of these, and obviously we're going to post all the links on Twitter as we always do. So my first story is called Clean by Two Weevils, which is an episode tag to Chained, which is the episode where they chain Tony to a serial killer and release him into the wild.
That's the best summary of that episode.
It's what that episode is about. And basically, after that episode, Tony goes to stay with Gibbs for a while, and it's just kind of like a sweet, domestic, slightly hurt comfort, recovering, but not like weepy or anything. It's just like a solid, comfortable story.
Yes.
The next one is called Opportunity, and it's by Anna Girl. You know what? I loved the episode Chained. It was amazing. And Anna wrote a short AU in which Tony and Jeffrey White, who's the serial killer, are on the run together in, a creepy kind of sexy relationship, fleeing from Gibbs to an island or something. It's great. It's crack, but it's very enjoyable.
It's the best kind of crack.
And the first of possibly two or three, I can see at least three here, stories by Prue in NCIS fandom.
That's awkward at all.
Well, listen, I dupe-conned you into this fandom for the express purpose of getting you to write things, and we weren't even friends at that point.
So you were ultra-successful, is what you're saying?
Yes, ultra-successful.
Okay.
And the first thing that you wrote, I believe this is the first thing that you wrote in the fandom, and it was so cute, is called Endearment, in which Tony goes grocery shopping and realizes that everyone in his neighborhood thinks that he's married. Yeah, it's very enjoyable.
Do you want to know the really strange thing about that recommendation?
What?
Is that you view that story as purely sweet, and most people think that story is very sad.
I live in a special, special world.
I
read that story as pre-slash.
Okay.
The next one is called Interrogative by the Hoyden, which is kind of like Gibbs and Tony are on a case, and they get snowed in at a hotel in Maine. And it's just like a really... You know what? I'm weak for this shit. It's like a little bit hurt comfort, a little bit sweet, like pining. And they get snowed in. Like, what's not to love? Okay. Another Prue story called In-Law, where while Tony is in the hospital, Gibbs gets a voicemail from his own father, like from Gibbs's dad, being like, I haven't heard from Tony in a week. Is he okay? And Gibbs is like, since when have Tony and my dad been talking?
They're bros, dude.
They're total bros. Next one, also by you, Uncovered. Listen, I really like this stuff. I worked really hard to get you into this fandom. Uncovered is an AU of the episode Undercovers, only Tony is a girl. And so obviously she and Gibbs go undercover instead of Tony and Ziva. And it's delightful. It's like plotty, they're douchebags, like Canadian assassins. What's not to love? And then I only have two more, I promise. One is called Rule Number 12 by Moon Princess Nat, which is a close-to-canon AU where Tony uncovers a case for NCIS during his work at the Baltimore PD. And Kate, McGee, and Gibbs, who are already a team together, come down to investigate and find two cases instead of one because someone inside Baltimore PD is trying to kill Tony.
Aww.
And it's, like, really plotty, really interesting, and it's great to see... Like, it's an AU where Tony joins the team last instead of first. And the last one is A Forever Thing by The Proofreader, which is just Marriage of Convenience fic. That's all you need to know. It's great.
Are you done? You have, like, eight more to go?
No, I'm done. That's my short list.
No one's ever going to believe us when we complain about NCIS being...
Okay, think of it this way. Number of bookmarks I have for NCIS is, like, fewer than 20 or 30. Number of bookmarks I have for SGA, just shy of 1,000.
Valid points. All right, so I have two NCIS recs of my own. They are both Gen, but only in the sense that NCIS is ever Gen. So, kind of gay.
Yeah.
These two remain, I think, my favorite stories in this fandom, I have to say. And the first one, they're both by the same author, Sequitur. And ignore the fact that they're on fanfiction.net. If you don't read it for that reason, you're going to be missing out on a hell of a ride with both of these. The first one is 10 Nonlinear Moves, which is a story about Tony being team leader in the aftermath of Gibbs losing his fucking mind, growing a creature on his upper lip and going to Mexico. It's a beautifully rendered story about Tony barely keeping it together and the way that he runs his team and how much care and affection and effort he puts into it, and how damaged he is, but it's really, really well done. And it never gets old. I'm tempted to reread it now.
I was just thinking that. I love that story.
It's a great, great story. And also Tony's, like, management practices are kind of fucking amazing.
Perfect.
I mean, they're funny in the context of that story, but I'm pretty sure I would have punched him in the dick if I was one of his employees. The second story, also by the same author, Sequitur, again, is called Rictus. Fair warning, the story is sort of gruesome. It is a version of how Tony got hired and brought to NCIS. And this is prior to us getting the canonical backstory. So this has been Jost, which is sort of unfortunate because as charming as the reality was, well, charming, I say, Rick is probably the best story in this fandom, I think. It's incredibly gruesome. The crime that Gibbs gets dragged into is basically a series of child murders with overtones of pedophilia and child molestation. So it does deal with really dark subject matter. And Tony is very much pushed to the brink of his, you know, general sanity, life, etc. in this story. It is, how many chapters is this? A lot. It is 17 chapters long. Really good, intensely plotty. Probably just a really good case fic. Really good case fic that doesn't skimp on the feelings, which is something that, I don't know, it's like a rare and beautiful jewel when you can find it. It's really good case fic that doesn't skimp on the feelings. Definitely give it a shot if the subject matter doesn't squick you out. My favorite story in this fandom.
Can I say two interesting things about NCIS fandom? Mm-hmm. One is that in the show, all the cases are pretty much adults murdering other adults for fairly good reasons.
Yeah, in the fandom, not so much.
In the fandom, it's like pedo child rape all murder all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know what's up with that, but...
Well, I mean, the fandom is...
The fandom is like a Criminal Minds fandom for NCIS.
It's oddly accurate, actually.
It's like they're watching the wrong show. I don't know what happened. And the other is that, as rare as good fic is in NCIS fandom, when you find good case fic, it tends to be exceptional and with either pre-slash or, like, a good side of just general feelings.
Yeah, lots of feelings.
When they do it right, they do it really right.
They do it real right. And we are thrilled to have our second ever contestant in our Fandom Safari game, which is a game that, like so many, has no rules, and we'll have a fake winner at the end.
Possibly no prize.
Possibly a prize. I don't really know what that might be, and you guys may not even want it when we decide.
The prize might be a terrible image file.
You know what? So we're going to hold that over your head. Maybe you won't win, and you can be grateful you never have to see it. But the rules of Fandom Safari are basically that you have to walk us through your fandom, and in so doing, give us a pitch for why we should come play in your sandbox in as little time as possible. You can either participate by contacting us and getting on a podcast live, or you can record an MP3 and send it to us. Our Twitter account is /report, and our Gmail is /report@gmail.com, because we're creative like that. So give it a shot, consider it, it's good fun. And this week's contestant is, we apologize in advance, because we're probably mispronouncing your name, Alucra. And, fittingly, she has done our favorite show about pineapples and feelings, Hawaii 5-0.
Hey, Internet at large. I'm Alucra, and I'd like to start by thanking Prue and MClutz for starting up this podcast. It's been a blast so far, and especially for this game and the chance to play. I'd like to salute my worthy opponent, Marilyn, whose hilarious fandom summary almost made me run a red light. I have to say, though, Bandom is a really complicated place, and I was shocked and impressed it came in under 2 minutes. I started thinking about fandoms that would be really simple to explain, and the thing is, it doesn't get much simpler than Hawaii 5-0, especially if you pretend the end of season fuckery never happened, which is what I do because it makes the world a brighter place. So here we go. Hawaii 5-0 in a minute or less. Thanks again, Slash Report, for letting me play. So Steve is a Navy SEAL with man pain and a tramp stamp, and his dad gets killed, so he flies home to Hawaii to get him some vengeance. And Governor Gene Smart says, hey, stick around, you can have all the money and ignore all the laws and constitutions. Steve doesn't want to, but then he meets Danny. Danny's from New Jersey, and he's in this pineapple-infested hellhole because he has a daughter, okay, but he doesn't like Hawaii or Steve. So naturally, Steve decides to stick around and change his mind. This is SEAL logic. They add in a badass named Chin with a lot of betrayal issues, and his loyal, even more badass, rookie cousin Kono. She dropkicks people as a regular thing, and together the four of them fight crime. There's a lot of pretty scenery, human and island. Danny's ex-wife is an awesome British lady, and Steve's friendly fuck is hot and smart. Steve gives Danny aneurysms, and they play therapist in the car a lot, and don't even pretend not to be married. Also, there are explosions.
And that was 44 seconds! How completely amazing.
Super good amazing. Job.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're both really impressed. Sure. And I like that it ends with explosions.
Key.
I think. Yes. Yeah. And next week, we actually have a Dresden Files fandom safari from Lucia Tanaka, who is my favorite Dresden Files author. So I'm really excited.
I sense favoritism here in clubs.
It's based on time. I can't, like, award her the prize for writing awesome fic.
I feel like you're going to try.
I believe I will be outvoted. Fully depends on time.
All right. Alrighty, folks. Thank you for joining us again. It's been a blast. Please forgive us for talking about nodding. It's not my fault. They made me do it.
It was awesome. I bet they appreciate it. The way people appreciate horror movies.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to really love the flowchart.
Yeah, they are. I really appreciated getting it in my email at work.
It's how I roll. It's who I be.
Nice. But in short, we will see you next week. Next week will also be awesome. So be prepared.
And send along, as we always say, send along your thoughts, questions, feelings at our Twitter account, @report, or ship them over to our Gmail. I think that's it. Thanks for joining us again, guys.
Have a good night.
Bye.
Bonus.
Also, could we have 2 minutes or 2 seconds of silence for a second?